Mahi Divine Grace, this confounded Chada AC Bhaktivedanta Swami said, Robaki.
Jai
Om Vishnu Param Hamdu Vatapitati Mahi Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Sarasati Kumaraski.
Jai
Sri Ramachaja Harirasukorki.
Jai
Fame Sehotsi Krishna Chaitanya Bhuri Dinanda. Sri Zubaita Gurhazi Vasadi Go Bhaktivindaki.
Jai
Sri Sri Radha Krishna Simon Radha Gundi Go Dhanaki.
Jai
Vrindavan Dham ki
jai.
Mathurya Dham ki
jai.
Navadvip Dham ki
jai.
Yamuna Maya ki
jai.
Ganga Maya ki
jai.
Sarasvati Devi ki
jai.
Bhakti Devi ki
jai.
Samaved Bhakti Vrinda ki
jai.
All glories to Sri Guru. All glories are glory to Sri Guru.
All
glories are glory to Sri Guru.
All glories
are
glory to Sri
I was so happy yesterday. I actually didn't know until I came into the temple yard that you were back. Nutama was back. Rukmini is here. And then I was so delighted to hear that Lakshmi Moni was coming all the way from Alachua. And that my wonderful guard, protector, Malati Devi Dasi. I have so many special god brothers and god sisters, and I think of this. So what is very dear to me, like Jamuna being attorney, I think of Malati and Lakshmi. And so I was thinking maybe they were coming. You know, they're my big god sisters, and they keep me in line. So every now and then they send me a line. Okay, Swami. What's up? So I think they had to come to, Lakshmi had to come to check and see, is this guy really dying? You know, I do all kind of tricks to preach. So maybe I've done the Maha trick. So I got people thinking that I'm leaving the body, and all of a sudden I come jump out of all of this. But by all so-called rational arrangements, I'm leaving. Actually, the doctors are shocked that I haven't left already. The degree of melanoma cancer that I have. Forgive me for bringing us all up here, but at the same time, you have a chance to have darshan with my deities. I hadn't come downstairs in quite a while. Yesterday was quite an experience. You have been down the stairs, but I was determined to somehow come for the festival. Prabhu, we need a chair for you, please. Someone's going to have to give him a chair. Let's see. You can come in. Yes. Many of us are a little sick these days. So. So we, I was talking about, okay, there's different ways to preach. Just like now. Now, we don't have you sign any release, so you forgive us again. What you're doing now is being televised. So we have our going into our 9.5-10 year TV show. And so these charity programs, they do five things or so. I guess four or five. Is that we use it for our weekly television programs. We also, now they're putting it on the websites. And therefore, devotees, well wishes, anyone who wants to tune in. Here's a message. It's been transcribed, particularly for the Ukraine and Russian disciples of mine. So then it's translated into Russian. And more important is that, or as important, for me at least, is that this is perhaps the last book that I'm writing. My writing is for mainly for self-purification as well as to try to share something. So these are readings from the book Die Before Dying. And the devotees are trying. It looks like they're pretty much on target. Now I was asking to see for Subal. Subal looks healthier than he is, but he's had so many transplants and sugar diabetes. Are you okay? All right. He's one of our one of the anchor devotees. Aja and Kripa, Vilikata, I think any of them are here, with the book writing. And so I asked them, I said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to attend any of the programs, but I'm planning to try as best as possible. I want to come to New Vrindavan, invited to do a program in Houston and Dallas. I want to do a course, a little seminar on grieving, with the idea of trying to help myself, help the well-wishers, and help the disciples of tomorrow, Krishna Maharaj. Because grieving has many stages. And when you lose your father, mother, or spiritual master, especially when it's very abrupt, that it takes a while to process it. And sometimes people are afraid to deal with their grieving, and they get stuck at certain stages. Other times there's not sufficient support systems, or there is lack of, as Vaishnavas sometimes we don't want to go to emotion so much, even though Vaishnava Bhakti is the reservoir of emotions that you have to remove from an art and liberty. But of course there's emotions that's directed toward the soul and toward spiritual aspects, and not a matter of lamenting because of material concern. Just like my two god sisters here. And at one point, I just started writing all my letters, yours and Srila Prabhupada's service, with love. So now this is a little unorthodox. Sannyasi writing like this, and what they say, writing to his god sisters also. Yours and Prabhupada's service with love. Writing love letters. Although practically every other letter a guru gets is a love letter. Doesn't matter who it comes from. Oh dear Guru Maharaj, I am thinking of you. I'm meditating on your lotus eye. My heart is fully for you. As a matter of fact, whatever you desire, just let me know. My body, my mind, my soul is all for you. Not only in this lifetime, but next lifetime also. The secretaries of the gurus, I don't know how they deal with it. Get all these letters. Then the next day, there is such and such tasi, such and such tasi, jumping up. Oh, Guru Maharaj. I'm the one who wrote the letter to you. Anyway, we want to access love. That is from the heart. We don't want to have the pridai rogue or pridai dula, weakness of the heart or disease of the heart. But bhakti is of the heart. So I was writing these letters, and my best well wishers, the first they were wondering, what's happening to this Swami? I mean, he's going to get this, he's going to get the next one to get married or something. First, try to explain in my own way that I wanted to remind us all that Prabhupada's service should be done lovingly, and that our movement is bhakti, and it's about trying to reach Bhagavan to being bhaktas, and all of this is the culture of love. But it's always also to help me with my own impersonal perceptions, and to think that each devotee is a chance to serve Krishna, a chance to serve Guru. And so just as the Guru was to think each disciple is an aspect of his own Guru that has appeared in multifold ways so that he can be able to serve his Guru in disguise in such ways. So I wanted to read, to continue as we've tried, and I'll try to make it a little shorter because if possible I would like some of our your uncles and aunties to share something, or they can answer the questions, or we'll see how fast I can move through this. We have a certain amount of time for the TV, so I'll have to use most of that time. But I want to write, I'm going to read a kind of a ambiguous meditation this time called I Am a Survivor. Now each of these meditations were done as I'm experiencing this terminal illness. Most of them were in Mexico when I was in the clinic, and then I was involved in Hawaii, in and out of a hospital and emergency and going through treatments. So I would write the meditation according to what was happening at that time, mainly with the idea of trying to prepare myself for the transition and the utilitarian that I am, to see how I could use death or use this experience to share something. Considering that I want to die on the battlefield, and one of the best ways to do that is to keep working on self-purification, and also to keep crying out and to share some of that. So in this book, and they're going to have it ready. We're praying, and I think they're on time, so that when I come to New Vrindavan, I can be able to
to make the book available. And I'm going to do my course. Is this the book? Is it ready for us now? Okay, so I haven't told it here in front of my deities that the book will be ready. So we, yeah, they're bringing it now and they're working on the last day out now. They go through the printer. So I'll then do my course then on this similar topic. Die Before Dying. It may very well be my last class. What a nice place to give that kind of class at. So, there are different meditations that we've been trying to share, a different one each Saturday. And the day after coming back to last night from the temple, I was thinking of which meditation will I share? And I was just reflecting on how some of my caretakers, they have been really trying for quite a while. In many, many ways, you know, we've tried so many different modalities, so many different, you know, protocols. And basically anything that somebody suggests to us now, doesn't matter what part of the world, because the audience have been so kind in researching and presenting things. And sometimes we're not answering as much, but devotees should know that it's because we've actually tried all of these things. And at least a half a dozen of them could have worked and may have worked, but when it is one's time, then it is the time. What is it? Rake Krishna Mari Ke Mari Krishna Rake Ke. Is that when Krishna wants someone to go, you go. And Krishna is to say, is wants someone to stay, you stay. When your guru is calling you for a service, you don't say, well, hold a minute. Why don't you wait another 10 years? Hey, Guru Maharaj, I mean, I'm too busy doing something else, you know. I'm too busy serving you, I don't have time to serve you. You know, so be okay with that, you know. So up until, I think very recently, I think Prabhupada had not made a decision. I feel he's made the decision. So it's just a matter now of how soon is. And soon in material time is different from spiritual time. So I see that I could be leaving in weeks, or I could be leaving in, you know, a few months. So if I keep trying to do something in the body a little longer, maybe it'll let me stay a little longer, just to bring closure in a few ways. But basically, pretty much after next week, other than a few seminars and things, that I won't be so much thinking about this identity. Bhakti Tirtha, the previous John Favors, Ghanasham, Swami Krishnapad, and that's something of the past now.
Excuse me, Guru Maharaj, can some of the devotees come in and closer to you?
I think it will be a problem. We could try. Can we try? There's a monitor there. I mean,
there's some people standing on the steps.
Okay, if the devotees, if they can come in from the steps. But if they can stand in the hall, then perhaps they can see the monitor. You can try it. No, please. Again, I'm sorry to pack us all in like this.
There's room for one over here.
Okay. I think I still should let him try to carry me down here. So many people here. So, we want to speak on I Am a Survivor. Now, there's the B.T. Swami at Calm and the IFAS. Some of different conferences, especially with my disciples, Russian conference, Spanish conference, etc. And I don't, of course, participate in any of those conferences, even the ones in English. But every now and then somebody updates me with something that's being said. So the other day someone told me something funny. Someone says, almost every class you give, you're crying. So one or two disciples or some are wondering, maybe that's a sign that Guru Maharaj really doesn't want to go. It's a sign he's afraid to leave. Basically, as devotees, we're not afraid of death. We may have our own idea of when we're supposed to go or how we want to go. I mean, I don't think I would have chose to go by cancer. But, no, my heart chakra is opened up, and it's like even last night when I was seeing devotees, I was just doing everything to avoid from crying. So the sentiments are there, and it's not a matter of being sad that I'm sick. This is a very exciting experience. I mean, it's cumbersome. You know, they have to pick me up, they take me into the bathroom, they have to pick me up, they bathe me now. You know, the side of the body is almost paralyzed, and, you know, I got 1.5 legs, and, you know, if I give you a whole list of things I have, you'll get mad. I mean, you know, if you want some of it, you can have one, you know. They give you the arthritis or the diabetes or high blood pressure. I mean, I got a whole arsenal things. But, you know, it's dual, because you either find ways to maintain gratitude, because Krishna doesn't make any mistakes. What is it like in my case, where I brought up this on myself for the most part, and some part of it also is for my own purification as well. But the bigger part, I think, is for my concern about the devotee community, my concern about the suffering, and my desire to take on something extra and to be used in some way to impact. Because my astrology and all things, whatever that's worth, says I have a long lifeline. My genetics, my father lived to be 96, my mother almost in her 90s, and so he had a long lifeline. But that's been altered, but put on the fast track. And maybe that's Christian mercy. If I stayed around too long, I may have become a rascal. So Lord is always me to think, well, let's pull him out now before he becomes an embarrassment. So I'm going to read briefly meditation on I am a survivor. Someone just told me the other day that there's a TV program called that?
Survivor.
Yeah. Survivor? Yeah. She was watching these things. I mean, every now and then I may peek also. No, I just heard about it, but it seems that there's a number of programs kind of like that, where people are put up against each other in competition in you know, very, very, very vicious ways. And individuals enjoy that because, you know, it's like the time of the gladiators. I mean, this gladiation is so intense that nobody wants to just know that they're actors. They want to see people actually suffer and beat each other and kill each other, you know? So they have the cameras come in with the policemen. They want to see them literally knock down the door and grab the actual drug person or this person, that person. So no, it's acting. They want to see the real gruesomeness. So I was thinking how in that kind of a movie, people are put together against each other, and the idea is who is going to survive, who can be more like God, who is the strongest, who is this, who is that. And of course, ultimately, we know that, you know, nobody can have all the opulences of Krishna. But at the same time, people in these material worlds, material bodies, are trying. But really, nobody really is the real survivor. Because in any kind of environment like that, even the one who so-called wins, that person has taken on so much trauma, so much bombardment of whatever the situation was, so many wounds or so whatever. And so the person really is not really a survivor. They're an experiencer. Maybe they endured it in some way a little longer. So there was a point when I was trying to write. Almost every beggar I've written, for lack of a better word, you know, many of my books are lectures and things transcribed, but the beggars are written by me, where I just go somewhere and cry and pray and scream and yell and sit down by a river or sit on a rock or something, and I write. And so basically, my beggars have been written, I feel, lack of a better word, in an altered state. And sometimes, 98% of the time, I sit down, maybe with some theme in mind, but it comes out a different way. So when I thought this title, I'm a survivor, I was trying to write that I have kicked the hell out of this cancer. But it just wasn't coming out that way. I kept trying, and I just let it come. So some of that may seem to be there, but basically, it really concludes that nobody, you know, really survives. You know, we are all we are wounded in different ways as we struggle with mature energy, and we don't mind that. We don't mind sacrificing and being wounded in the service of our spiritual masters. As Bhakti Vinod says, any suffering that I encounter in behalf of my service to Krishna is my greatest joy. I'm writing now, and you'll see, I guess you'll see on one of the websites. And sometimes God, believe God says, just write me. And a couple of times I'm asked if they don't mind if I share it. So just a couple of days ago, Guru John wrote me the letter. And he was asking this question concerning suffering. And knowing that I was trying to somehow pray in the mood of Vasudeva Datta. And so his concern was, suffering really isn't really only transformed by higher consciousness, by understanding it and just dealing with it, whatever may come. And so he wanted to know what my expressions were, and I basically felt that devotees like him, when they write me, it's mainly their mercy, their love, and Prabhupada using them to help me to reflect. So I reflected and I sent a letter. Basically, the summary of it was, is that, yes, as we look at Adi Atma Gadi David Gadi Bhotik, everybody suffers. It is a matter of how much and in what degree. You know, we're suffering from our minds, from our bodies, from material nature, and it's there. And that's the call for being in the material world. And so that's there in the background. But then I explained, but it's quite interesting that phenomenal is that when you suffer without knowledge, your suffering is worse. And when you suffer and you know that somebody loves you, it helps to minimize some of your own suffering. Some of you have seen sometimes you've been ill and a relative or a friend has just tried to call you or come see you or offer you this, offer you that. And none of that stuff is working. But they're offering you this herb and this Ayurvedic treatment and this homeopathic treatment, and it ain't working. But but your suffering is less because their love is the real potion, and it helps sometimes to minimize it. And then I explain how suffering is less sometimes when you see somebody suffering more than you. You know? And then your own suffering is still there, but it's a little less because you realize it could be worse, or you see someone else's worse. And then, of course, we looked at the mood of Ramanujacharya, Vasudeva Datta, Pallad, how their concern was the benefit and welfare of others, and how Krishna will intervene. One of his servants is suffering, or Krishna will intervene and one of his servants is making a request on behalf of others suffering. So I said, so all of these, I think, are to be considered as I try to look at this and look at and be, and as I'm joyful of being used in some way. And then I said that after I'm gone, that my little service to Prabhupada will be even more impacting. But there was a time when I was thinking I was going to be a survivor, and I was doing my own intellectual speculation if I'm going to survive or not. And then I realized, fortunately, unfortunately, I realized that what I was asking for and wanting to do in ISKCON at this time, in terms of impacting and opening up the heart a little bit, helping us all even more to think more about how any of us can go at any time, allowing us to be a little more mindful, and so many things, you know, we all try to do in our service. I realized that if I did fully pull out of this, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same for so many of my disciples. It wouldn't be the same for my God brothers. It wouldn't be the same even probably for me. You know, sometimes we feel a certain way, and then we're out of that. And when we're ill, we're more destitute, and then we're well, we kind of go back to business as usual. So as I try to walk through this, I realize I'm gone. Because I've asked Prabhupada to use me the best way possible. When I did my first MRI, and they put me on that conveyor, I just made my body and mind as full as much as I could. It's yours, Prabhupada. So whatever I got to experience, whatever it is, let it happen. And so I thought, well, now which way am I going to be able to serve Prabhupada the most based on my little situation? And I realized that I would have to leave the body. That my going all the way through this would offer more to the Vaishnava community. And that may sound strange, that might sting. So you watch the color factor and you'll see. I think this will be the case. So let's talk about this. I am a survivor. who is almost a contradiction, oxymoron. We may have a few more weeks, a few more days, and I'm reading, I'm a survivor. Violence and war, we need to raise the windows more we can. Violence and war are prevalent all over the planet. Every 15 seconds, one person murders another person somewhere. That is, you see, globally. Now, I saw some statistics yesterday also, and this is a little frightening, because even some of you who are sitting here, you know, have cancer. In America, 38% of the citizens will have cancer in the next 5 years or so. Like, unbelievable. Something like 33% of women now are coming down with cancer. So I mean, it's a phenomenal disease. It has a lot to do, you know, with modernity. The introduction of television in many countries, the murder rate has doubled within the last 15 years. One living entity is food for another. What is that? Jivo, Jivasa, Jivana. Not only do different nations attack each other, but members of the same ethnic groups, institutions, religious groups, and even families are constantly in conflict. The greatest violence is often the violence each individual perpetuates on him or herself by unhealthy addictions, bad habits, and unhealthy lifestyles. And this is by Karma, and Matsuya, Baya, all these enemies of the mind, fear and enviousness and greed and lust. One of the greatest sicknesses is cancer, which is among the world's greatest threats to a healthy physical existence. It is no accident that many people come down with cancer, and here's some sociological, physiological issues that we all need to be careful about now. Because we all have so many cancer genes or germs or parasites in our bodies. And those who are coming down, it has a lot to do with their resistance not being able, their immune system not being able to keep a healthy balance. It is no accident that many people come down with cancer after a great trauma in their lives, such as the death of a dear one, a divorce, or the loss of an important job. In other words, people are more prone to come down with cancer after something traumatic has happened in their life that's affected their mind, but then affects their body. The loss of a job for some people is devastating. They get sacked, fired, divorce, or a death, someone who's dear. And so the immune system gets weakened. In other words, a very upsetting event takes place that causes the mind to experience great disturbances. And such mental energy sends unhealthy messages to the neural transmitters. Some years ago, I gave a lecture at the American Medical Association, and I capitalized off this, looking at mind and body. And I talked about how I tried to look closer at the physiological benefits of love. And I was explaining how someone doesn't feel love, then the mind sends messages to neurotransmitters, to different organs, and it's like anxiety, fear, all of these things, they're mental. They like attack different organs within the body. And there are many studies and reports showing how those who feel love, they live longer, they recuperate faster from disease, they are less acceptable to certain things. If someone is in the room who you have some great affection for, it often can affect whether a person lives or dies according to some situations. Anyway, it goes on. You see the literature. So cancer cells, and no, it's no accident that many people come down with cancer after great trauma. Unhealthy messages are sent to the neurotransmitters, which then attack various organs and tissues in the body. Cancer cells are like intruding enemies that are highly trained for espionage work. They sneak into the body, often hiding for many years. It's like we've noticed that most of the treatments we've tried have actually worked for a minute. And then the cancer just finds ways to get around that. You know, the cancer mutates, or it hides for a while, and then it comes forth. Like now I got cancer, and the leg's amputated, the cancer come back there, I get it here, it's in here, it's in, we don't know how many other places. But hides and then comes forth. Cancers, so these, I can show you, they hide for many years, and sometimes people go to remission and it comes back. Just as Maya, or evil, sin, is always around and waiting for an opportunity to capitalize whenever there's a weakness. Wherever we're weak, particularly, is going to be an area that Maya is going to attack each of us. So I'm amongst the hundreds or millions of people attacked by cancer. Presently, tens of millions who are attacked by cancer have died. Tens of millions are dying. And millions are seeing themselves as cancer survivors. It is, however, an illusion that someone thinks that they have survived cancer or any attack of death. For no one actually defeats or conquers over death. You know, whatever sickness or whatever one may do with their body, the ultimate result is the same, isn't it? Is that it's death. At best, we only postpone the inevitable, for death is still around the corner. Sometimes we hear people explain how they are survivors of what? Of alcoholism, of child abuse, of abandonment, of their parents, or of rape, of battery, other such painful experiences. But actually, none of these people are really survivors. Each of them have been traumatized by the difficulty, even though they have somewhat passed through these devastating experiences. Each person is still marked. And each person still carries impressions and wounds from their challenges. So there are many different types of support groups. And sometimes people have too much of their identity based on that trauma that's happened in their life. Yes, it's necessary to face the trauma, but literally to name it, to face it, to feel it, and to release it. But there are times when a person holds on so much to what has happened that they can't go outside of that identity of being the child of alcoholic parents, of being a rape survivor. And so every month or every couple of weeks they go for the group, and unfortunately the support later turns into a reinforcement of that situation. Many people meet regularly. It's like we're all traumatized by so many things that happened to us in many, many lifetimes. What to say in this lifetime? And we're all, as we're going to look closer at the end, in a few minutes, is that we're all benefiting from so many of the wonderful submissions and reciprocation and literally good traumas that have come into our life. And we're the products of those, the good and the bad. Many people meet regularly in support groups to check in and discuss how they are 5-year, 10-year, or 14-year survivors. It is wonderful that such support groups help people be open and honest. Just tell them downstairs to turn off the heat. Just tell somebody on the steps, tell them downstairs they can turn off the heat. We have enough Shakti in here. We keep more people around, we can cut down on the heat bill. It is wonderful that such support groups help people to open and be honest about their most difficult challenges. It is also very wonderful that such people can have a safe environment where they can discuss these problems with other folks who not only understand but fully empathize with them. However, many people have no identity other than being a survivor of a particular trauma. By constantly accepting and identifying themselves with the trauma, it can consequently make them stagnant, for they may find that their whole lives revolve around that which has traumatized their lives. Their identity as a survivor is ambiguous, because no one has really survived anything. Their experiences remain a part of their consciousness and have impacted upon their being. At one point I was trying to really evaluate, why did I make this sort of prayer? You know, how much ego was involved in that? Sometimes we have ego, we want to be a martyr. And ego has all kind of ways of surfacing. We want to be the most famous. We want to be the most humble. We want to be the most seemingly compassionate. We want to be the martyr. Everyone thinks in there, remembers us. Oh, yes, yes, yes. How wonderful, martyr. So I was thinking, come on now, what ego is in this? And then I came to a realization that I could not make that prayer. You know, 1 or 2 thousand people told me to take it back. And I thought, yeah, maybe I should take it back. Stuff is too heavy. What's going to come next? You know? I got a few more things to experience, and I'm thinking, how can I handle what I got now? You know, I was thinking it was very difficult, having amputated leg and walking on crutches and a walker. The next thing I know, I can't even use crutches now. I don't have the muscle strength even to walk on a walker. So I thought, hold a minute now, what's going to be next? Bedridden. Okay, let me get ready for that one. But I realized that I could not make that prayer. And so, now why I could not make that prayer is because what I do as well as what any of you do is based on so much about what we bring into this body, into this world. It's based on our service. It's based on also blessings, mercy, and effort. And so my own traumas from previous lifetimes has put me in a situation where certain things I could not do. And so it was a matter of time. And so therefore I made that prayer because I didn't have a choice. And it's wonderful. You can really enjoy something. You don't have a choice. But if you do it and you feel like you're doing it with freedom, you feel, oh yes, I have done that. But in fact, you didn't have a choice. You have to clean up the house. And you have to do it because it's part of what you have made, committed to. But then you go early and you clean the house up and you go, oh yes, I've cleaned the house. Well, you had to do it anyway. But it allows you to feel more in control. Even if the experience did not bring, because I look back and I've been going over my diary notes since I was a brahmachari. And I saw almost from day one, I've been praying to be forced to do whatever's necessary, knowing how crazy my mind is. And I've been praying and writing diary notes in the mood of Vasudevdana. I surely didn't understand it then, don't understand it now fully. But as we do make submissions, they're heard. And they're accepted in such ways. No one actually defeats or conquers over death. At best, we only postpone the inevitable, for death is still around the corner. Many times people think that they will very easily survive a test or a challenge, even an operation. The teacher, supervisor, or doctor may say how it is very easy, which is routine, ordinary experience to pass through. But often, the person still fails, or the patient dies. Other times, the teacher, supervisor, or doctor explains how it is a most difficult situation with a slim chance of survival. However, the person not only avoids devastation or death, but he or she achieves very high and comes out of the situation with great success. We've all seen it. And the doctor says, oh, no problem, routine thing, you just have to take out your tonsils, and the person dies. Oh, it's a simple thing. And then sometimes it's very, very complicated. It's only a 90% chance, only 10% chance this person is going to live, and they do, which shows that there's greater factors involved. The ultimate outcome depends on the Lord. Very few people these days are surviving the devastating effects of Orthodox society. The attacks which come from gambling, meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex have fully captured most living entities. These great enemies basically enslave people because most of the time they accept these influences gladly. Actually, it is difficult for someone to avoid the influences of enslavement. Maya or illusion is stronger than anyone since he is a perfect servant of the Lord who has the duty to test the jivas and to prepare them for eventually returning home back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. Therefore, no one can defeat her alone. She is surely an equal opportunity employer who does not discriminate. Daivihi ashaguna mai, ma maya durachaya. Mam eva ya papajante, mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, Krishna says, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily, he says, cross over it. When Maya attacks, it is difficult for anyone to defeat or conquer over her influences. However, with sufficient help from Krishna and his special agents, Maya can easily be avoided or even become a servant of such devotees. When the fourth living entity is blessed with special mercy, the great gift of prema descends on him or her. Such a devotee will also not survive because this special mercy will change him or her forever. Having come just once in contact with Bhava and prema, the devotee's life will never be the same again. And then I come to conclusion with a few the last points. Also, if one is fortunate to get a moment's association with a pure devotee of the Lord, this will be their greatest benediction. As we know, sadhu sangha, sava shastra koya, lava matra sadhu sangha, sava siddhi hoya. So we're saying that one of the greatest boons for a devotee is to be traumatized by the association of a pure devotee, to be traumatized by the culture of prema, the culture of bhava. And so one will never be the same. Just like if you have contact with pure devotee, you'll never be the same. If you're receptive, you get blessed. If you're offensive, you're cursed. You carry a curse with you. You'll never be the same. There's no question that as we are traumatized materially by these things, that we really survive them. But there's no question that we really survive the association of the pure devotees of the Lord. That they are carriers of such bhakti. And so as we have a wonderful chance to honor that, we get benedicted. As we don't, then we carry the consequences. There are so many souls who Baba just kept little time with, and they have been eternally benefited. There's so many Gaba Dangasas who never even had a chance to even speak to Prabhupada, but they have dedicated themselves so intensely. The other people who met Prabhupada are the people who served Prabhupada and in high positions. And because of minimizing the association and what it was thereof, and they just used their intelligence for rationalizing all kinds of things, or they thought that their intelligence was sufficient to understand purity. And so because of lack of humility, see, if someone isn't properly humble, you're in trouble. Guru Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva are very difficult. And so when there's humility, there will always be progress. And when there's lack of humility, there's always danger. So Krishna consciousness is itself a very electrified process. And it has very electrified personalities. And this, if it didn't, then why are we participating? If it is something historical, then what is it? What is the benefit? And if Krishna is not sufficiently merciful, then it means Krishna is merciful. It means he's constantly arranging that there is purity for ability for one to take advantage. Because otherwise, there is no sufficient progress. If there's not also living examples of purity, we can't just only become pure by reading books. We can't only become pure by reflecting on what happened in the past. We have to have from time to time living examples of what we read. Otherwise, our faith will not be strong enough to break through the molds of material nature. Or our ability to work on ourselves will not be strong enough because we'll not have sufficient examples to be able to work on. But if we do not have sufficient humility, even when we have that, we will miscue it. We will not see it. Some people have served Prabhupada or met him and never able to understand what he was giving us. It's like our two mothers here. So they have survived and survived in so many ways. And they've even had husbands who were in high position and even in a renowned state. And even though they've gone through that kind of trauma, they've still stayed. They did not leave. You know, so often we may be persuaded because of what we deal with ourselves or our friends or those who are dear to us. It's natural that we are products of sangha, products of association. But then when you're challenged directly by those who are most dear to you, or you're challenged by my attacking you where you're most weak, and somehow you keep saying yes and yes to Krishna, Krishna is watching that in the heart. And one's bank account, spiritual bank account, is growing and growing and growing.
and developing. Now, someone may not be able to recognize what that means of being that kind of warrior in Prabhupada's service, Rukmini and Anuttama. They could very easily just do a typical kind of retired thing and just take care of themselves and really, and just consider that, look, you know, they've done their austerities, you know, they've gone through so much, tolerated so much. But at this time in their life, or even in the material world, people would be retiring. That they're thinking more and more ways of how to try to serve the Vaishnava community. Anuttama stretching himself in so many ways and meeting so many people, doing so many contacts, so many bridge things, which is risky, on behalf of trying to help the movement. Rukmini is having to deal with so much business and things. She don't want to do that. She has to deal with all of that as a way to facilitate the movement, facilitate her family. It could retire very easily. So we have all of these wonderful devotees. And that's why when people from some, with all blessings, people from other groups, and they say, oh, it's kind of, you know, they're just administrators, they're, you know, where are the serious devotees? Well, hold a minute. Haribo, where's your eyes? You know? Do you think Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Chaitanya Maharaj just went to Prithaloka? Huh? You think Gogavinda Maharaj, you know, just went to the heavenly kingdoms? When they were on the planet, how did you think of them? When they were on the planet, how much did you see them as carriers? How much did you look and think of what wasn't happening? As Yudhana Maharaj is explaining, we're talking about it very clear. And I wrote it in one of my first discussions about my realizations I'm having as I go through this. One of my first realizations was effort is extremely important, but mercy is more important. And that Prabhupada's position and the position of the guru is so much more than we think, because as basically as we have to leave here, it's all in the mercy of the guru. And that if somehow we have just done the necessary, we have every right that the spiritual master compliments and snatches us out of the body and takes us back. Like in the case of the sparrow. You know, I may sound very arrogant. Some people, I'm just, you know, having to do dual feelings. I've been excited about leaving because I'm convinced that when the right time is there, my Guru Maharaj is going to carry me to his service. And so I'm excited in that way. And at the same time, I'm looking and thinking, okay, let me make sure that I brought closure in all the ways as necessary. And I'm getting a lot of help. His body is getting so broken down that when it's time to go, I'll be more than ready. It's making it so inconvenient. And many of you will be more than ready because you'll be thinking, okay, you know, we don't want to see this guy go through anymore. You know, Krishna, take him. Yeah. But it's not a matter of, I hope, ego, but it's a matter of faith in knowing how much mercy is a part, especially in Kali Yuga, of our system. And how, if we able to do like these devotees have done, that mercy is there. Every time you water toss, every time you have darshan, every time you chant, and every time you avoid, especially making offenses, then it means you're just constantly, you know, depositing. If you make offenses, then you're withdrawing. But if you're just constantly fixed in such ways, then it means one success is guaranteed. So let me end this. Sadhu-sangha-sadhu-sangha-sava-shastra-koya lava-matra-sadhu-sangha-sava-siddhi-hoy. The verdict of all revealed scriptures, of course, is that for even a moment's association with pure devotee, one can attain success. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Maitra Lila 22-54. This is the real purport of being a survivor. A genuine survivor is one who can say, I am a survivor, and we end with these points. So let's try to reflect on these last points. A genuine survivor is one who can say, I am a survivor of Krishna's and the pure devotee's special mercy. Just as violence can descend on one through all types of inauspicious attacks, just as cancer is attacking millions of people, just as all kinds of traumatic experiences can attack people throughout their lives, just as people come together in survivor and support groups, we must develop the consciousness whereby we are pleading for the real attack and the traumatic experience of Bhav and Krishna Prema.
How wonderful to be counted amongst those who will be able to say, I am a survivalist of Krishna's and the pure devotees' special mercy. All other areas from which we think we survive and free ourselves from the difficulties are only very temporary, because death will still find a way to defeat us. For the most fortunate jiva who is traumatized by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, he is also permanently affected, but also in the most glorious way. Such a soul can be a part of the transcendental support groups that are commissioned by the Lord and his eternal associates. They have so many realizations, experiences, and pastimes to share with each other. All who are fortunate enough to get their association will, of course, benefit. I am the beggar. I, the beggar, pray that one day I can say that I am a recipient, a survivor of the blessings of prema from the Lord and his pure devotees, who are the authorized carriers and distributors of such mercy. I, the beggar, am praying to be divinely traumatized by the mercy of the Lord and his pure devotees. Hare Krishna. So, kind of an oxymoron is we're saying about surviving while we are being devastated by terminal illness. And so, in today's discussion, we were just trying to look closer at the fact that nobody really survives anything. Anything that we encounter has become a part of us. This is the position of sambandha, of association. There's no neutral, pure neutral association except in the spiritual world. That anytime we associate with someone, you're either receiving or you're giving. You're either raising consciousness or your consciousness is being brought down. Therefore, we want to be more mindful about who we associate with and how we associate. In each case, if we're having the mood of being a servant of the servant, then our associations will be very beneficial. That is, someone is seemingly inferior to us, and we have a duty to associate with them to set an example that will help to serve. If someone is a peer, we have association to reveal our minds and pity the changes of love, and to be open for open criticism and receiving assistance and comradeship and fraternity. And if someone is superior to us, we have a duty to try to hear and to follow their example. But in each case, there should be the mood of servitorship. So no one survives. At whatever position of service is going on, one is either benefiting, moving more toward liberation, or getting more connected with stagnation and incarceration. Especially how we relate to each other every day has so much to do with what's really going on, you know, with our survival issues. Whether we're going to be more traumatized by marcha-loka, traumatized by sense gratification in the Mahatagga, whether we're going to be traumatized by devotion and love. And so every moment we are making choices. Every moment we're dealing with what we've already experienced from the past, which is preparing us for the future. And if somehow we are able to just make ourselves more available for being traumatized by Krishna and his devotees, then that kind of trauma is wonderful, and we all want to be those kind of survivors. A survivor of the attack of bhava. Survivor is like somebody gets attacked, you know, by a lightning bolt, you know. Oh, hellish. But we can be attacked, you know, by prema, because it is there, and the servants of the Lord are looking to see how to help us. Krishna has so many agents that are looking to see how to help us. And this is why we're fortunate to be a part of this parampara. Is that Bhaktivinoda is looking to see how to help. Prahlad Maharaj is looking to see how to help. We are connected with this as part of Lord Caitanya's mission. And our direct grandfather or father, Prabhupada, he's looking to see how to help. So if we are needy, then we can be helped fast. If we are allowing ourselves to receive it. And we're all needy to different degrees, but sometimes we are very needy, and we're not thinking that we're so needy, and because of that, we don't get as much help as we can. when we're put more in a dependent state, we recognize that we're more needy. And therefore, our chance for help becomes stronger. So maybe there's a few short questions we may have. Or maybe we'll forego the questions and let's let... if my God sisters or God brother, would you like to share anything today? I think that's better than me, you know, taking questions. I've already done my actor thing. I've given my little presentation for the TV. I'm dying. I'm still trying to be a movie star. Go ahead. Hare Krishna.
Yesterday, your spirit was with me with my patient, who I had to take around.
What am I doing? I'm not going to take any questions. Please give me. Yeah. Next week, if I'm still here, I'll take questions. Tune in next week. Then Swami will still be around. If you'll still remember that he said we can have questions then. But let us we want to pass it to the God sister, your auntie.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes. You're all survivors, so if you can just share something about your realization of survivorhood.
When I was listening to you speak, I kept remembering the verse of Queen Kunti, that she actually saw things that ordinarily people see as calamities, or people see as unwanted. Disease is always considered unwanted. Certainly death is considered something we don't look forward to. But the suffering that we undergo in life, no one wants it. Everyone tries to avoid it. Even here, we're a little...
Anybody who's near a window, you can pull up a notch more.
Yeah, we didn't say that. We're sitting and it's hot. It's so we're outside. So we try to figure out how can we avoid this uncomfortable feeling. But Queen Kunti, she prayed for calamities.
Yes.
She prayed for them because she was gifted or achieved a vision to see those calamities as impetus for advancement in spiritual life. So... unfortunately for me, I guess, or though certainly I can see it as a blessing, over the last several years, many of my God sisters and God brothers have allowed me to be in their association at their time of departure. And watching their willingness to see that as impetus for devotional service, for seeing Krishna's hand, for moving forward Prabhupada's mission, has become a great blessing to me, although I'm not very happy about it most of the time. But I think that being a survivor means that you have that vision, that you can actually see that whatever happens is just Krishna's hand, just adjusting things so that we can come closer to him, that we can make advancement, that we can come closer to Prabhupada. So, to get that vision as quickly as possible. Then as soon as we get it, then everything in our life changes. The vision of everything that happens to us immediately changes. So the sooner we can get that, the more learning experiences, the more quickly we become closer to Krishna.
I think about that the other day also, is that we've had so many devotees who've left. And so many cases that when we come to visit them, especially in the last days before departure, we see how much that they give to us. When you think about that, it can be a reminder of how much mercy is there within the movement. How Krishna hasn't forgotten, and how the Sri Upanishad prayer, one is asking not to be forgotten. That so much of the power of the process comes forth. And it's not just, leaders or even sometimes senior devotees. We've had, some young devotees who have left, and it's amazing, Krishna consciousness. I mean, of course, one of our most recent, Muli Prakriti, it's just astounding how she confronted her death. And cancer is such a devastating, debilitating thing. When I was in Hawaii, I was talking to her husband, and he was still in awe about how she consistently, was chanting those, 64 rounds every day. And how she confronted when she found out that she that the cancer had come back, and in the last days. And so one case after another, in so many ways, in so many cases, we can see that, you know, we made the right choice by joining this movement.
I prefer to ask a question. Which is, you may have answered already, but if so, you can expand a little bit. We're very fortunate to see Krishna's arrangement for great devotees to lead us by their example through every stage of life. And also we bear the burden on the departure of great devotees and the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And we see that so many of the greatest generals and acharyas and teachers and strong brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts are not here having taught us the final lesson, but leaving, as Lord Chaitanya left so much of the world preaching to future generations, and probably did the same. You've been such an example and wonderful in your bold preaching work. I was wondering if you could share some instructions how we can keep the spirit alive and how we can take that individual into our hearts, knowing that in the future when you're not here, when others aren't here, that we need to continue that, or else really what you've given your life to will not be fulfilled. So how can we do that to serve you and to serve these other great Vaishnavas?
That gets the real issue, because it separates us from being a cult or a culture. A cult is very motivated, or it's a movement, like the one he was saying yesterday. But it's a movement based on personality. And a culture is a movement based on trying to serve the Lord. And so the sadhya, or the conclusion, the goal, the siddhanta, that doesn't change with what persons may be, you know, the facilitators. And if we get too caught up in the facilitator, we miss the chance to connect sufficiently with the facilitation. That in one sense, guru doesn't mean anything to us because we want Krishna. But because Krishna has given us that we can know him through shastra, sadhu, shastra, and particularly through guru, then it becomes important. And so if we want to come to Krishna tonight, we have a duty to come as he is calling us. And he is calling us means that whatever is happening to us physically, whatever is happening to our mentors, or to our, what has happened to our previous acharyas, the same Krishna has been coming through. And now we have to be hungry and hungrier for that Krishna. So that means the Shastra is still with us. And we'll live on and on and on, generation after generation. And the great sadhus, their example is there, and especially now, with all the difficulties of Kali Yuga, we have so much more technology to be able to be aware of what the sadhus did. In some ways, the devotees who come to the movement now have more chance to know more about Prabhupada than most of us when we were when Prabhupada was on the planet and we were with him. Because you have so many now things that you can read and hear about, you know, that's accessible. It's just a matter of how much energy you have to research those and to find what Prabhupada said in this darshan, what he said in this lecture, how he explained about this verse, and several different lectures how he explained about that verse. There's so many different things. And so Nusma's question is really important, because we do a tremendous disservice to all of our great acharyas, the Lord Nityananda and Mahaprabhu themselves, if we're thinking that this experience is just for the moment, or just for the present connections that we have, whether it's a particular project only, particular relationship with a particular spiritual master. It would do a great disservice. Prabhupada himself made it very clear in the Gitanagari prophecy. The best way to glorify a person is not through monuments, is not through, you know, horrific words or whatever, but it's through creating communities that represent the ideas that they live by.
So the best way we allow Prabhupada to live on is that we let him live on through us. And the best way that we allow people to have greater appreciation for him is how we represent him. And see, that never stops. There's always more and more chance to be able to be used and to allow each of us to do our part, carry our baton, or engage in our own battle, coup, etc., to offer to the mission. When the spiritual master goes, and everyone's going to go, and every person's going to go. It's like every father and mother's going to go. And so now, if it's like, now it's not important to be dedicated, it's not important to be more serious about one's life, because now the physical presence is not there, then that's a sign that one didn't really understand, you know, who they were connected with and what they were connected with. When the teacher goes, it's even more important now that the class finds ways to appreciate each other more, to work together more, and to be attentive to the lesson. So it's like the devotees here, you know, in my own case, I have disciples all around the world. Some of my disciples here in the Washington Institute Project, they kind of grew up so much on me only. So they're going to be some of the ones that have the greatest difficulty when I leave. And so we're trying to make it very clear to them, hold a minute now, it never was about just a person. I mean, I went through some extra juggling to try to reach people in different communities by dressing a certain way and giving certain kind of topics and bringing some professional people forth. But the idea is that we're bringing you as an offering to the spiritual master. Like a few of my disciples now, I won't receive letters from them because I've spoken to them in certain ways, three or four like that, the rascals, and I just cannot not be honest with them. But the basic thing is that whatever they're offering me, I'm offering it to my spiritual master. And so I just can't offer such things to my spiritual master. At a time that one is dying, you know, one doesn't have chance to wait and to pat you on the back while you gradually have chance to understand and accept something. It's like, hold a minute, is this something you feel I can offer to Prabhupada? And from what you and I know of Prabhupada, this ain't what we offer to him. So, you know, okay, then just do what you have to do, but don't try to offer this or get me to offer this to Srila Prabhupada. Because ultimately, the guru is a disciple. And the degree he's a disciple is the degree that he's a proper servant. So this should be something that all of our movement, we should be focusing on more, is that we're not just having a mother or father. We're having a family. So whether your spiritual masters are on the planet or not, if you're just thinking you and your spiritual master, you've done a great disservice to the mission of Prabhupada, to the culture of devotion, and your own devotional creeper is not sufficiently going to flourish. You have to be sharp enough, eager enough, and just natural enough to get help from so many, many different sectors. And this is why community is so, you know, is so important. This is why Sangha is so important. So, in one sense, I'm extremely blessed, extremely fortunate that I'm aware that I'm leaving. And those who connect with me are aware that I'm leaving. So they have a little more time. Even if I left at 105, they still wouldn't be ready. But at least they have more chance to kind of honor the fact that our spiritual master is gone. And so some have been writing, and they write me, well, who should we take as a shiksha? And I say, that's on you. You must look and see devotees who inspire you. You take more shelter of those devotees. You know, it's not that the guru is going to say, okay, now this Mataji and this Guru Maharaj, yeah, these are the ones that you should take shelter. And this will really please me. Krishna ain't that small. Yeah? He's much bigger than that. And he has so many ways to help. And so therefore, the devotees have to see how Krishna's coming through someone and take advantage of that. And then hopefully have many shikshas that they get help from. Maybe Malati or Rubin? Share something. No more questions. Anyway, it's up to you. Whatever you want. I'm your servant.
Yeah. I'm happy to.
I'm sure in a previous life we were God brothers serving together, so I'm just going ahead of you to kind of arrange something here.
It's almost easy to forget that the topic is departure when we're sitting with you. And to thinking, actually, as you alluded to, this departure is always going on, just because there may be some possible time frame, but actually that departure is always there. And we have a tendency to forget about it. And I see in my own fortunate and unfortunate experiences where Krishna's actually given me situations to become very serious in the service, even to the point of putting me into a situation where death was imminent. How easy it is to get into the survivor mentality and think, well, I can escape that one. Backslide a little bit. Instead of increasing the determination to be a fully committed servant. In the process of passing, there's in some cases consciousness, and in some cases the person may or may not be conscious. But what's really wonderful about what Prabhupada has given us is that it transcends the barriers of the physical body and mind. And the one experience that I did have that actually kicked me out of a certain situation, which was, you know, like you could say in The Walking Dead, I was quite alive, but due to spiritual neglect, I was quite dead. Ultimately, Krishna did put me into a situation where I was in a coma, and the doctors had said there would be less time, less than 12 hours. And I was like a basis to Prabhupada, that there were some devotees who knew that this fallen person was in this fallen condition, and they came and they were chanting. And at that same time, being hooked up to all kinds of tubes as I was in the hospital. So all kinds of tubes. I wasn't aware because I was brought in unconscious. But, you know, in that state of oblivion, you don't know if you're living or dying, you have no consciousness. But by the presence of the devotees who came, sent by Srila Prabhupada, because who else would sing? Hearing that chanting, they actually heard
it. It's a little louder. They're having trouble trying to hear the steps.
They actually heard, in that unconscious state, they heard the chanting of the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And, which isn't surprising, because it explains in the Bhagavatam that you hear the mantra not through these ears, but through the ears of the heart.
Mm.
So there were some other noises, other discussions going on, you know, people putting tubes and things in my body, nurses, doctors, and my family had come to say goodbye, and I didn't know any of them were there, but it was the chanting that I heard. And at that time, there was actually a shift in my consciousness that I could detect even in my unconscious state. And the consciousness changed for me, because I felt these devotees, that they cared enough to come, and I was in a very uncaring state at that time. So you were speaking about the power of love, and the effect of love, how we have to be conscious of that. This is a movement based on love, not be afraid of it. And at that time, there was a shift, which I actually felt even physically, no longer conscious. But I determined that I had to also care. And it didn't mean that I had to live. I actually, up until that point, I actually thought I was dead. When I heard the chanting, I was even more convinced of it. But I managed to get my eye open, and when I saw the tubes in the arm, I understood that I was still in this world, and to shift whether I have to be, whether I come and go, I have to care. Because in chanting is, it boils down to the chanting. Everything is there. All kinds of things are chanting. We really need to, I think she touched the nerve yesterday when she mentioned consciousness and movement. There's a lot of stagnation. And the stagnation we have to see within ourselves. It doesn't manifest otherwise. It's not like, you know, it's out there. It's in here. And I think the gift of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the Hidayana. It's what survived us from the material world and revived us into spiritual consciousness. And whether one is living or dying, without this mantra, there is a decay, there is a death. Yesterday, before coming here, I stopped to see one god sister. The day before, she has fallen in New Vrindavan. And nobody knew about it. And she went to her apartment. And, she went to the apartment of another god sister who was not present. And the god sister called. And Rupa said that she was throwing up. She was disoriented. And it was maybe almost a couple hours after the fall. And Tupakini told her to call another devotee in the community and have that devotee come down. And fortunately, Tilakini thought, let me check and see if she's called the devotee. So she called the devotee a little while later. She said, has Rupa called you? She said, no. Well, please go down immediately. She's hurt herself and she doesn't sound right. So Rukmavati went down to her apartment and saw her there very disoriented. She didn't even just physically, there was no blood that you could see externally or damage, but she didn't look right and she wasn't speaking right. She immediately called for an ambulance. When the ambulance got there, you know, when we live in Dobbin, it takes a while, so it got there. And she's like my age, you know, only 60, she's different. They asked her how old you were. She was. She said 20. And they said, when did you fall? She said, oh, a couple days ago. And so she was very disoriented already. And they brought her in the ambulance and took her to one hospital. But they, when they determined that there was a serious trauma to the brain, they found, figured that out there. But they couldn't deal with it, so they sent her to another hospital. And when they got, by the time they got there, now several hours have passed, and the doctor said, immediate operation, or she will die. So it was 4 hours of surgery on the brain to reduce the swelling and the pressure. And during that time, only Rukmavati was there, and of course she couldn't be in the operation room. And Rukmavati, in certain respects, may not seem like she's in a very good spiritual position right now. Which is true, but at the same time, because she's been given the gift of the Holy Name, she knew she had the presence of mind, you know, to chant. Mm-hmm. And there was a serious way, they've kept her extremely sedated. They don't want her to move at all. And it was a little shocking to see this person with tubes in every place and some kind of, I don't know what, in her head, and just stuck with things in her head. Cuffed up, discolored, and her mouth was kind of a big girl, and her teeth were showing, and something going in her mouth. And, you know, she might as well have been dead, they have her so sedated. And I was whispering in her ear the mantra, the Brother Hari Nam Chatter, which is a call out your Krishna, little buff. And gifts from my appointment that they've given us. And I took the frame day now and put it on her. I was whispering in the air. And you know, I couldn't detect any changes or anything. I couldn't. They ever hooked up to all these machines. So then later, just right after I left, another somebody came in and she was reading the Nectar of Devotion to her. And the nurses came in and they had her stop. Because they noticed, like when I chanted in her ear when they were reading, it was activating the brain, you know, but under the seal of this machine. But under the circumstance, it was not advisable. They wanted to keep her, to allow for this trauma to pass. It's happened. And they're not even sure, you know, there won't be severe damage. So then we brought in one devotee to read and chant silently. Being from the Vrindavan, were prepared for that. We know how to do it. And yes, you know, seriously. So obviously, you know, Lord Chaitanya won't neglect her. And you know, the devotees. You know, so the departures can be in any form. And you know, the Krishna, like I discussed with you one, at one point, you know, the Krishna factor can happen because that's definitely what happened in my case. It was, there was nothing else left to hope for. And yet, I'm here. That was in 1989. It's in 2005. I'm still here. By Krishna's mercy, because I was too sinful to go at that time. So it's actually wonderful being with you, but it's also not wonderful. You know, if we have to be honest, we don't want you to go.
I'm still outrageous, that's the funniest. He says, Maharaj, you know, you've gotten a little bit more mellow, but you're still outrageous now. But let us know about Arupa.
No, so as I was last night during dinner finger prayers, you know, of course many of us are primarily having, you know, prayers for you, but I've started including all those known and unknown Vaishnavas that you're also representing, because there are many out there, like who knows Rupa? Well, a few of us do.
Yes.
Yet she gave her life and her body to get Prabhupada's palace, and her body's already a broken down mess because of having a cement mixer fall on top of it at one point while she was laying doing work at the palace, and so many other complications. So you're kind of our representative, you know, for the, is that that statue of Liberty when he was saved? He must be a lot of
time before your last appearance.
So you're our statue of Liberty. And everyone is worth your body to stay with us as long as Krishna allows. Because no matter how broken down this body gets, the Krishna factor is alive and well.
Yeah, let us pray for Rupa. And this is very brief. This is one of the downsides of my whole experience, is that I'm just thinking how much, as a leader, you know, there's facilitation and support system. But there's just so many devotees who, you know, as they reach this phase, they wouldn't have the kind of support system that, you know, that we may have as leaders. And we have to look closer at how we can facilitate, you know, those kind of devotees.
I wanted to add one thing. So she's in Living Hospital on the third floor, room 343. Right downstairs in 243. So down was Ikavali Prabhu giving birth to her little son who showed up yesterday.
So birth and death, I got another grandson.
I was thinking, sitting here, hearing all of this loving exchange, how so many devotees here, disciples of yours, even in spite of hearing you give so many essential instructions, might be thinking, well, but I never really got personal instructions. Or, I need to get some kind of personal instructions, even though you're giving the most pertinent instructions. And I, you know, I have a question for all of them that, you know, please let us know how we can serve you. And don't be shy because, you know, we need to know how we can serve you, how we can help you if there's some kind of buried pain. You know, we need to, this is our service to you, Maharaj. So, you know, we live here in Washington and we want to help in any way we can. We don't know sometimes how we can. And we were just in India. And well, first of all, I was thinking while you were talking that actually none of us are survivors. And remembering hearing Prabhupada talk on a tape about how actually death is an illusion, how really there is no death, but how that's such an elevated stage to be able to think like that. And remembering hearing him on his deathbed saying, everything is moving, acting under the supreme desire of Krishna. And how my first impression when I read your Vyas Puja offering, I was so disturbed at you and so really angry at you, thinking how much we need you in your progressive thinking, and how, you know, is this country just going to be left with all the most arch-conservative people who think in small-minded and sectarian ways, and the people who are really not afraid to talk about the unacceptable things, those people are going to be gone. And I remember Judy came back from India. She was with Radhanath Swami at the Rajamandala Parikram. And I was thinking, I was telling Vrajalila that, well, I'm not praying the way he says to pray. I'm praying to Krishna to save me. Judy came back from Vrindavan, and she said, Radhanath Swami was telling everyone, don't pray the way he says to pray. Pray to Krishna to save him. He's telling everyone about 1,000 devotees. I heard a couple of stories that I wanted to share when we were just in India. One was about a godbrother of ours, Prithipuja Maharaj, who was a sannyasi, disciple of Prabhupada, and had a lot of difficulty at the end and was not in the association of devotees at the end.
Yeah.
He had AIDS, and he was living in a very fallen condition. And I just heard this story that he had AIDS.
Probably. Is that the story? Because that story is a little bit. It's one
about his mother. Okay,
maybe it's one you haven't heard yet.
Because I've heard a few stories that were.
I just heard this about his mother, so I'll tell
okay.
it.
Okay.
The source had integrity, so I'll repeat the story that he was had AIDS, had been out of the Association of Devotees for many, many years, and he went to his own mother and said, "I'm dying. Please take care of me."
That wasn't true. His mother was dead a long time ago.
Okay, maybe
I don't know if you know this, but I'm married to
him. Yeah. So don't make me faces. Okay.
There's a couple of stories that I've heard recently that just, they're nice stories, but they're not true.
Okay. I heard another story. Now, this story, this devotee told me that Mula Prakriti personally said this to her on her deathbed, that she was just before leaving, this devotee said that Mula Prakriti told her this story, that she had a dream that she was wandering around Vrindavan, and she was just walking around Vrindavan, and she came upon a big golden gate, and there was a big lock on the gate, and Prabhupada was inside the gate with all the devotees, all his disciples.
Wow.
And she said Narayan Maharaj was outside. And Prabhupada said to her, "Don't worry, I have the key. I'll let you in." And that just was such a breakthrough for her and such a big realization. And she was able to fully take shelter of Prabhupada at that time. To the point where when Narayan Maharaj came to see her and she was leaving, he said, "Are you thinking of Krishna?" And she said, "I'm just thinking about my Srila Prabhupada." And he said, "Well, you can think about me too." And she said, "I'm just thinking about my Prabhupada." And so I just wanted you to know that I went to so many holy places and I prayed everywhere for you that you would be fixed in remembrance and absorption in Krishna. We can't understand Krishna's will, but we can only want to serve you and serve all your disciples.
God. So, she has an Uttama and Malati and Lakshmi, so many wonderful God brothers and God sisters. I mean, they are uncles, they're your uncles and aunties, and it's really, really important that we take more shelter of our uncles and aunties. It's really, really more important that we take more shelter of our great-great-grandfathers, because all of this gives us a certain kind of encouragement and support. It's so wonderful when we read about the life and the writings of Vishwanath Chakravarti, read about the activities of Bhakti Vinod. It's so wonderful when we think about our present-day, you know, mentors. But how as wonderful is when we think about that Prabhupada created such a vast society with so much variegatedness that we have so many, many different kinds of devotees and different opportunities to be able to get shelter, to be able to get inspiration and to rebuild our minds and to find out how we can serve. Our mission is a mission, of course, of trying to reclaim souls while simultaneously we're trying to become pure ourselves. There's never a lack of different kinds of services that one can do. One of the ways is to inquire. Ask the older devotees, you know, how you can serve. Or if you have issues in your mind, as we're looking now at grief in different ways, that it's not something you hold in. It has to be processed. And one of the ways it's processed is it has to be faced and worked through. So especially these kind of caring devotees who are there because they've weathered the storms. And Prabhupada has empowered them in so many amazing ways. So this also helps me when I am realizing that Prabhupada is calling me. And I think I was reading something to Mark Krishma, I was just saying at one point, in terms of Prabhupada. And then I'll end because it's a little late. Tamal Krishna was mentioning how when Prabhupada was leaving during those last few weeks and months, how he went before the deities in Vrindavan, and he was praying to the deities, "Hey Krishna, you got so many pure devotees where you are, you know, why are you going to take our Prabhupada away?" You know, why, come on, let him stay with us. Because it's not that I am pure, and I'm definitely blessed. I won't be timid about that, because to say that I'm not blessed minimizes the mercy of my guru. So I'll let everybody know I am blessed by mercy in such ways, beyond my quality. But it really shows how vast Prabhupada's movement and vision is. And I've mentioned this, and I'll end with this. Like in the early days, Prabhupada would send someone to a place, and sometimes they may be there a year or two, and then they go to some other country even. And for us, it was a little bit taxing. Like, this devotee had a vision about trying to develop that project, would become familiar with them, and then he gets sent somewhere else. But that's how the movement spread. Prabhupada didn't wait until we were fully, you know, matured or two. There was another 5 or 6 leaders ready to take over in that situation. It was a need. His mission was an emergency mission. So, as I kind of sped up my situation by my prayers, and then it kind of facilitated Prabhupada to, as he's choosing some people to serve in certain ways, he says, okay, you're offering yourself, okay, so let's see. I mean, everything could change any moment. But to be honest, Prabhupada has already sent the helpers to take me out of the body already. So you should all consider that I'm gone, and the soldiers are there. Now, if you have the if Prabhupada wants to change that in the last moment, that's up to him. For the last few days, the helpers are ready, and based on how ready I am, or how ready they're ready to move even beyond my readiness. And so it's kind of a done deal at this point. But let us see. I mean, Krishna consciousness is full of mystery, full of adventure. You know. but still has worked in so many ways. And we have a certain time that all of us have in the particular apartments that we have. So I'm just trying to kind of fanatically be a utilitarian as I always have been, fortunately and unfortunately. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have a few weeks, a few months. So let me see how I can use whatever few weeks or months I have to offer value and to try to add a little more service, you know, to Prabhupada's mission here. But this is what I think about every day, almost every hour. And so I'm like a loose cannon now. Be careful. Trying to think of ways how I can offer a little something here and there. And let's see how long I'm allowed to do that before I become a disturbance.
I just wanted to say something that hit me kind of like a bolt, you know, and she was talking about Rupa. And as you, Prabhupada felt a great sense of emergency when he came. He knew he was going to leave from the minute he got on the Dalabhuta. He knew his days were very numbered. And like you said yesterday, you know, he translated the Krishna book at the beginning, you know, he tried to do summary studies of things to let us know. But that emergency, that sense of emergency, has to remain with all of us always. Rupa didn't have a notice like you have. She fell and, you know, maybe she'll leave or maybe she could have left. And we had one experience in Alachua just recently where an 18-year-old devotee, Pratu, maybe you know, young devotee, Gurukuli devotee, was in a car and he got hit by a UPS truck and that was the end of Pratu. And it was a big shock to all the Gurukulis. Oh my gosh, he was only 18 and he died. You can't even blame it on anybody else. You know what I mean? It was just, who do you say? How do you say anything? So he was just, and the whole community, everybody, there were 700 people at his funeral, you know, amazed that an 18-year-old boy had left the planet. But 18-year-old boys are leaving the planet every day. So are 17-year-old boys and 2-year-old babies and 19-year-olds and 28-year-olds. So all of us are in a state of emergency. And we don't have time to sit around and think about when I get old, then I'll get it together. So I just impress upon you all, because Prabhupada impressed upon us all, that the material world is in a state of emergency, and we're in a state of emergency. We have to become Krishna conscious right now. Whatever we have to do it now. We can't wait until we get old, because I may be older than you. I may not make it back to Florida. Who knows when any one of us will leave. So whatever you need to do, do it to become Krishna conscious somehow or other. Fix your life in such a way. And don't wait one second. Do it now.
Okay, so after Malati, then we'll stop. We have some prasadam for everyone. And we'll let you get free from this hot room here.
Well, I just wanted to make a small comment. I remember last year at one point in time when it became apparent that this was a serious illness you were facing. Mm-hmm. Bhakti Trimarmat had written a small letter to the GBC conference.
Yes. Letter.
That when it became apparent last year that Maharaj's illness was, you know, more serious than we would have to imagine, Bhakti Sri Maharaj had written a small letter to the GBC conference. And, you know, he kind of ended by saying, you know, don't know we need you. And when I read that, everything else was okay, but when I read that, I really didn't like it. We don't want you to stay because we need you. We want you to stay because we love you.
Just so we can go downstairs and take prasadam, and yeah, I can start taking my medicine. And thank you all for coming. Let's see how much we have together. But Lakshmi Mani's last words, or a good epilogue, is that we're all moments away from leaving the body. We all have to be very serious about what we do, and things can just happen so abrupt, and they do happen very abrupt. So we're all looking at our own lives. We must look closer at, you know, committing ourselves with greater intensity. Jaya.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I couldn't get up and give you a seat.